I would like, if I may, to take you on a strange journey.
To explore strange new worlds. To seek out new life and new civilizations. To boldly go where no man has gone before.
Fangirl Radio.
Mothers, lock up your sons. The fangirls are busting out all over. It's Fangirl Radio.
Fangirl Radio.
Here's the fangirls on Jackalope Radio.
Hey, everybody, and welcome to the latest and greatest episode of the Fangirl Radio Show. I am your host, Jessica Dwyer, and with me is my lovely co-host, Miss Rachel Moore.
Happy Sherlock birthday!
It is, in fact, the detective's birthday, and we are very happy about that. It is great because this episode we will be talking Sherlock later on, as I can't believe a show that as myself and many Sherlockians, including Rachel, I'm sure, are thinking, we've waited 2 years and next weekend is the finale.
Oh, I should mention that the accepted date of Sherlock's birth, which is January 6th, is actually on the date of recording, not on the date of airing. As a nerd, I feel compelled to.
Yes, this is true. I said next weekend. It's this weekend, actually, as of this airing, this coming Sunday.
Sunday
is the finale of Sherlock.
Don't remind me. I'm in denial.
And I have a theory of what's going to happen, and it's horrible.
Yeah, I know. If it's anything nearly like my theory, we'll have
I'm sure you'll enjoy my theory will make your heart.
I don't know. I think maybe you, I don't know. I think maybe we possibly came up with the same one. We'll have to find out.
Yeah, we'll compare notes. But yes, we'll be talking Sherlock as the wedding happened, and Rachel and I have seen it. Also, we'll be talking Downton Abbey, which returned this previous Sunday, and also at least stateside. And also, we will be talking Community, which came back.
Yay!
And I didn't watch Community, but Rachel didn't watch Downton, so it's going to be a nice little spoiler for each of us on that. But before we get into our discussion of our returning and soon to be leaving TV series, let's go through some Week in Geek, because there's quite a bit of comic book filmdom going on, and rumors are flying. I have a little bit of an update on Doctor Who, which starts filming tomorrow as of this airing.
How excited are you?
Oh my god, I can feel his little heart pitter-pattering here. There's a picture in my head of Peter Capaldi staring up at his ceiling going, I'm doing it tomorrow. But before we get into that, I wanted to talk about the rumor mill for all of these comic book films, which we'll just start off with the big one, which is Superman Batman, which has a ton of stuff coming out now, what they're doing. Rumors popping up about Green Lantern's now going to be in it. They're saying now, they're trying, because everyone and the brother has decided this is basically Justice League Light. They're trying to say that, no, this isn't going to be a Justice League movie. This is definitely a Superman flick. We're going to have superheroes in it, though, as part of Superman's journey. And, of course, you know, they've cast Wonder Woman. And the big one now is Jon Stewart. Green Lantern, that's another one that they're talking about having in there.
Wait, Jon Stewart as Green Lantern?
No, Jon Stewart the Green Lantern.
Oh, I was like, I misunderstood.
No, I know. No, totally not that Jon Stewart.
I'm not a Green Lantern girl. I just know that all the comic book geeks I know, well, for the most part, I have to qualify that, because there's always the ones that you can't get enough. But none of us really want to see it. I mean, I just kind of have big feature fatigue right now, to be honest.
Well, you'll even feel more odd about this movie or less inclined after you hear this new rumor about what the origins of Wonder Woman are going to be.
Oh, no.
What they're saying now is that the Amazons will be descendants of the Kryptonians that landed on Earth thousands of years ago. So now they're going to completely disregard the Amazonian mythos behind Wonder Woman and have that the Amazons are actually people that were born of Kryptonians.
Oh my gosh. That makes me so angry.
I don't understand. Why can't they just keep the pure myth that is Wonder Woman's being born from the clay that her mother used to create her? You know, like, keep it in, you know, they made all the Thor stuff work.
Right.
Why can't
maybe that's DC, what, maybe they got flack for, I don't know.
Why can't DC do what Marvel did and make the mythos behind the character? Because Thor is even more of a myth than Wonder Woman, because he's actually a Norse god.
He's somebody that people still worship.
Yeah, I don't understand. So now that's the case. They're saying that Wonder Woman's origins, to tie her into this world, which is so ridiculous.
It's so stupid.
It's ridiculous.
She's Wonder Woman. What more do you need to know?
It's almost like they're belittling her to tie her in to Superman because they still don't think she could stand on her own. And that, to me, is a disservice, major disservice to the character. And the female heroes in the comic book world again. I mean, why is Wonder Woman getting such a hard way to go?
You know, there's a really good article on Boing Boing recently that was talking about women in video games and why all the advertising stats on video games are wrong about women's buying in. And I kind of feel that way about the big ticket comic book movies, is they assume that women are not buying tickets for some reason. So they gear everything towards men, and then the women don't show up for the flicks, and then they go, oh, see, this proves our point that women don't spend money on comic book. When, I mean, everyone I know that likes Thor the Dark World is a female, and they're there for one of two reasons.
Well, and yeah, it's Loki, and then
and
there's
Thor. I mean,
I go because it's a beautiful epic as well as eye candy. And you know what's so funny to me is the fact that the eye candy for chicks in these movies is dressed. They have clothes on.
Yeah. Well, I mean, because it's not, I mean, there is the objectification, but it really is about the smart one, the well-dressed one, the, you know, and they, I mean, why is that the villain?
Yeah, exactly.
Why is my choice, you know, of a well-dressed superhero, Tony Stark, who's a misogynist, or, you know what I'm saying? Like, why, why don't I have a female superhero that's not Pepper Potts doing her weird version of, like, She-Hulk?
Yeah, and
I mean, I was so excited for that, and it's embarrassing how excited I was that they actually, like, let her do something cool.
And yet, it completely defied all logic.
It did, and
it made no sense in the story, and it completely disregarded this thing that they had just spoken about a half an hour before.
It let every, you know, but it was the only time in one of those movies I saw a woman do something cool, other than maybe Sif, who doesn't get any screen time.
Yeah, but what about Black Widow?
Yeah, but she's a minor character.
She wasn't in the Avengers.
Here's the other thing about her in the Avengers. And they, because Joss Whedon thinks women are people, he doesn't write her the way they wrote her in the first Iron Man movie she showed up in. Because in that movie, I was so bored with her. I'm like, yes, yes, we get it. Scarlett Johansson in, like, leather jumpsuit. Great.
Well, and that's what they're saying is going to be sort of the way this goes with Superman, Batman, is that... It's going to be her basically showing up like Black Widow did.
When she showed up, and she's still a more minor character, when she showed up in Avengers, she's out thinking and out fighting everyone from the get-go, and the fact that she's gorgeous and in a jumpsuit is incidental. And all of a sudden, I'm like, I like this character. Where did that come from?
Joss Whedon.
Yeah. So it came from a writer writing a woman as a person. And that's all I ask with Wonder Woman, that you give her, if you gave her the emphasis on her backstory, we would watch, because we all know how Superman happened. We all know how Superman happened. I don't need another movie telling me how Superman came to.
Right. And trying to tie these two together when they never have had any sort of thing like that. What that you're basically sort of like, twisting the Supergirl mythos to make this work.
I think that next week we should call, we should get some viewers or some listeners to volunteer to a random survey, and we should ask them to tell us Wonder Woman's backstory, and we should ask them some of these other things. I think we should prove that this is necessary.
This is an unnecessary thing. People, they don't need to rewrite this. The character is as iconic as Superman. And I just don't get why you're jacking with this backstory. I don't get it. So moving on to Avengers Age of Ultron. The big rumor here is the fact that they are going to be filming in South Africa for this movie.
Oh, cool.
And the thing that a lot of people are thinking is the fact that Africa, South Africa, Wakanda, Black Panther. So they're thinking that this movie, which is probably going to be one of the biggest superhero movies, it really is. It's going to be one of the biggest superhero movies ever. You're following up the Avengers, the biggest blockbuster ever, with, this is the sequel. I think they're going to use this, and I think people are right to assume that this is probably going to have a little bit of Black Panther in it. There's going to be a nod there. I really, truly believe. So it'll be interesting to see if that's the case. No, this is pure conjecture at this point, but a lot of people think that's where they're going with it, and they're going
to... I don't know. It could be. I just think that South Africa is freaking gorgeous.
It is freaking gorgeous. And
so, I mean, I would film there. It's like filming in New Zealand. Like, do you really need more reason than New Zealand? I kind of feel that. Especially about, like, Cape Town. Cape Town, South Africa is on my, like, bucket list of places to go.
Same here. I'd love to go there. Not just because of the accents.
I have a good friend who is from Cape Town.
But I would love to see that. I would love to see, even though we really can't utilize him, I'd love to see Idris Elba be the Black Panther. But he's already in a Marvel movie. I don't think they can get that to happen. But yeah, so that is a possibility that they are maybe going to be setting up a... Because that's another one that a lot of people are wanting to see have a spinoff, is Black Panther. And it's a great character. I think that would be interesting to see it happen. And also, everybody's like, you know, that's Black Panther. That's a place where vibranium came into play, you know. So we'll see. We'll see if that goes down. The next one is Ant-Man. And a lot of people were just assuming that Paul Rudd would be playing Hank Pym.
Mm-hmm.
But now Edgar Wright and I saw on one of my websites that I check out, they were talking about the fact that a few years ago, there was an interview with Edgar Wright about what he wanted to do with Ant-Man, because this has been hanging around for a while that he was going to do Ant-Man, and they were talking about Henry Pym and a guy named Scott Lang in the comics who steals the Ant-Man costume to do crime.
Oh, yeah.
And so that kind of took place with what he's saying. This is an actual quote from an interview that he did. He said, is to have a film that basically is about Hank Pym and Scott Lang. So you actually do a prologue where you see Pym as Ant-Man in action in the 60s. And then you have a flash forward to Scott Lang coming in and doing this, and then they team up. So it sounds like Paul Rudd's not going to be Hank Pym. He's probably going to be the Scott Lang guy. But once again, pure conjecture. But that sounds, I can totally see that going on. And that would be really cool.
I don't care what happens, because Ant-Man is one I'm not worried about, not just because, you know, people have less invested in Ant-Man than other characters, so I think there's some more to do with it, but because Edgar Wright loves comics, and he loves comic book readers, and he loves to watch, he is a director who makes the kind of movies he would want to watch, and so I'm all about it.
And the fact that they did that test footage that we've seen, and that just blew my socks off. I don't know if you saw it, Rachel, but the test, go look it up. It's probably still floating around online. But the Ant-Man test footage that they showed at Comic-Con just was phenomenal. It made something like, a lot of people are like, Ant-Man, oh, this is boring. This looked great, how they utilized the size shifting and all of that. Plus Paul Rudd, who makes anything better. And, I mean, come on, the guy beat down Michael Myers with a baseball bat. He did. It's true.
I'm going to have to take your word on that.
No, seriously, Curse of Michael Myers, Paul Rudd.
I never argue with you when it comes to horror.
So, Doctor Who, Room and Control, here we go. It really annoys me when people post photos that are completely obvious that they aren't what people are saying they are. And there's one going around right now online, and I think enough people have gotten the word out now telling them as of today that is not his costume. There's a photo of Peter Capaldi. He showed up at a Sherlock Sign of Three event.
Yeah.
And a lot of people were happy about this. He signed autographs. He took photos. He talked to everybody. He was giddy. And it's a little schoolgirl about what was going on. But he was Peter Capaldi. He wasn't in his outfit. That's just how cool he dresses. Okay, you know, smart jacket, probably a scarf, coif of hair, beautifully done. That's just Peter Capaldi. He was not in costume. This was him just attending a Sherlock event. And they did a screening there in Cardiff where they're going to be filming. And he just showed up, signed autographs, and got to watch the Sign of Three with everybody because, like everyone else, he's a big geek. And we've established this. And he loves Sherlock, no doubt. So
well, who doesn't, really?
Who doesn't? But anyway, so shooting starts this week as of this airing. It actually starts on January 7th, so tomorrow. And it's going to be taking place in a location that a lot of people are going to be familiar with, because it was actually used in the episode The Next Doctor with David Morrissey and David Tennant, that was used for a Victorian England area. And I believe it's called Maltings is the location. So Capaldi has had his costume fitting, but he wasn't wearing it there. The other rumor is that, and we already kind of established this, we already kind of knew this was going to happen, Madame Vostra, Jenny, and Strax are back. The Daleks are supposedly in this, and it's supposedly a two-parter. So, two-parter Dalek. And the other thing is, Capaldi is not going to be in costume for 99% of the episode. They're going to make us wait to the last damn 2 minutes of him getting into the TARDIS and figuring out what he's going to wear, just like they did with Matt Smith and just like they did with David Tennant. Because if you remember, when Tennant showed up, he was still in Eccleston's outfit, then he was in pajamas.
Right.
And then he didn't put on the trainers and the suit until the end of the episode.
Right.
So that's going to be the case there. The other thing is, they think this one's going to be set in World War I. So you're going to have World War I Daleks with possibly Jenny and Strax and Vostra, and they're going to be helping the Doctor, who's still going through regeneration weirdness, because it was a pretty epic regeneration that he's got a reset of an entire regeneration cycle. They're saying that it's going to be like an old train station is going to be the setting. There was lots of sandbags and barrels and things, so I'm wondering if they're going to have, like, World War I where the Daleks are siding with the bad guys, and it should be interesting. I think it's going to be a good one. And so, yeah, that's the rumor control of Doctor Who. they didn't film today like everyone thought. It was actually Capaldi walked through, and this, by the way, we're recording this on the 6th. Capaldi did a walkthrough on set. He got to see the TARDIS control room again, where he, the big round room. And yeah, he did his costume fitting and everything. So somewhere in Cardiff, Peter Capaldi is staring up at his ceiling in his bedroom, freaking out and probably rubbing his nose and doing the thing with his hands that he does.
Isn't it like 7 hours later there?
Yeah, so it's only like, well, he might be getting in a car right now to go on set.
I was like, he's probably going to work.
Oh, he's going to be the doctor. He's doctor. Now he's the doctor. He's the doctor right now. Oh, and Rachel, my last bit of The Week in Geek. Twin Peaks is filming right now.
I know.
There is a now. No one knows what they're doing, but there is a good possibility that I doubt this is going to be for a full series. That would have sparked a lot more news than this, I think.
I'm guessing mini series.
Well, what I think it is, what people are thinking is the fact that they're doing a Blu-ray set of the TV series that's coming out. And I think what they're doing is a possible special deal for the Blu-ray series. So it could be like a follow-up, because the thing that happened in Twin Peaks was Laura Palmer tells Kyle MacLachlan, Laura Palmer tells Dale Cooper that she'd see him 25 years from that day. And that series was set in 1989, so that would be this year. There you go. Good chance that we're going to see the return of Laura Palmer and Agent Dale Cooper. Probably in something like a Marvel short. Only it's going to be a Lynch.
I don't have words, which is bad for radio. But.
Rachel's squeeing internally right now because it would just sound horrible for the radio.
Yeah, yeah.
But yeah, so there you go. We might have that reunion between Laura Palmer and Dale Cooper in heaven having some damn good coffee and pie. There you go. So on to our discussion for tonight, which is our triple header of television. And the first one is going to be, let's have Rachel talk about Community.
So I think we've already talked ad nauseum on the show about Dan Harmon sort of getting ousted from his own show and then saying, you know, he was trusting the people he'd been working with all this time to make Community and make it the way that they knew how. And then he came back and then said he wasn't going to complain about how they made it. And that he complained about it, which he shouldn't have said some of the things he said because they were not okay to say. But the truth was, it was a lacking, uneven, awful for Community season. The sad thing is a bad season of Community is still better than most television. But for instance, something that should have been awesome, like the puppet episode, that was just nearly unwatchable with its lack of any kind of humor or plot, or I was just schlocky and bad. So coming back, we got two episodes released at once, which was wonderful because Community is a typical sitcom, half an hour dealy bobber. And the first one is called Repilot, where Abed, being Abed, points out that it is time to, you know, rebrand the show like Scrub season 9 when Zach Braff left. So we open to, and this is going to be a little bit spoilery, but not spoilery enough that you won't want to watch the episode. And we open up to Jeff Winger having gone back to being a lawyer. And apparently if you try to be a good person and a lawyer, you don't make any money. So he's not being very successful. And his nemesis convinces him to, through a convoluted means, to sue Greendale. So he puts together the study group of people to save Greendale, to convince them all to actually sue Greendale because their lives have gone bad, especially in the last year, which they all say the last year of things going bad shouldn't count because there was a gas leak.
Smash.
They completely explain it that way. So the first episode's a little bit dark because it kind of points out how nobody's where they wanted to be. Everyone's graduated and things have gone not great for any of them. They address in the matter of that time the kind of wonky storylines of season four. They address how Troy has just become a like sidekick to Abed and has completely lost himself. They address how Greendale treats its students and how if you're going to get good people out of Greendale, what are you going to do? So in the course of this episode, as we kind of all precognated that would happen, Jeff Winger comes back as a teacher.
Oh, wow.
And because we learned at the end of last season that he got his degree in education. So he comes back as a teacher. Everyone decides to restart their lives and take different things at Greendale. And Jeff Winger then in the next episode falls under the mentorship of an older teacher played by Jonathan Banks, who many people know him from Breaking Bad, although he's been in everything. But as Professor Buzz Hickey, and Jeff Winger learns that being a teacher, you have to act differently than being a student, like come up with, say, syllabuses and grades. So
it's a job.
It's a job. And so season five did what so far in two episodes did what season four couldn't, which is the show is transitioning. There are things that are different. Characters actually progress, but there's the quirkiness, the things that we love about it, and the pop culture references done in a clever way instead of a shove down your throat. We get it, Abed. Pop culture reference. Cool. Annie's neurotic, blah, blah, blah. It just, the whole thing is in two episodes makes up for all of season four and redeems some of it.
You know, the thing that was ridiculous was I was ill and I'd gotten through part of season three and I thought, I've heard about season four. Do I really want to do this? I'll skip ahead and just see a couple episodes of season four to see the differences. Oh my God. It was the most obvious difference of tone and writing that I had ever seen in a show. I mean, it was so overtly bad in comparison to the previous things that I'd watched.
Right. And I mean, the problem is that it's not, lots of people say, you know, it's not that bad. There are worse things on television. There's not much better. But the thing is, Community and Dan Harmon set the standard so high that it was so obvious that something was missing. And in two episodes, it's just made, I mean, everything is more interesting in the show now. And I wasn't sure in the first, I'd say even 10 minutes of Community, because that first episode was dark, but it had to be to kind of get over that whole mishmash of, I'm sorry. Season four, there are just episodes in season four. There are some that I like, but the balloon episode, which had puppets, which is like everything that I should like. What a waste.
Yeah, I'm almost scared because I'm now starting on Hulu season four and I'm gonna have to just go through it.
Yeah, well, and there are some that are worth watching, and but there are just a few that are nigh unwatchable just because they're so not with the keeping of the show.
Yuck. Well, that is, I figured when I heard he was coming back what they were going to do and that it would be good again. So I had, that's why I was like, okay, I'm going to keep with it. If they had not brought him back, I was just going to end with season three. I wasn't even going to bother continuing on. It's like Dexter after the John Lithgow season. I think that's season four. Just stop. Just don't even bother. So another show returned, at least stateside, that our UK friends have already seen all of this season of Downton Abbey. And it came back with a 2-hour premiere on PBS on Sunday. And as is the usual with Downton Abbey, this didn't have a ton of drama. It just showed us where all these characters were at in 6 months after the death of Matthew, who died in that random car crash because he wanted out of the show. That's pretty much just what happened.
It's true.
And so 6 months later, Mary, Lady Mary, is all in black, and she is just shattered. She just is destroyed by the loss of her husband. And Michelle Dockery is just stunning in this. And, you know, she's always beautiful, but she manages to
be... Will it make me care about her for once?
I think you will. I think you'll be irritated with her, which is typical with Lady Mary.
Yeah.
But
I mean, it's hard because I love Michelle Dockery, but she does such a good job at this character that it's sometimes so hard to love that you're like, why did he marry her? Because he's everything. And she's like, oh,
right. And the thing is, she even makes a mention in this that she's acting just completely like soulless. She does this great job of being soulless, and she's talking to, I can never remember his name. How can I forget this guy's name? Carson.
Oh,
sorry. I was going to call him Carter. That's because that's his last name in real life. But no,
yeah, Mr. Carson.
Mr. Carson, she's talking to him, and she says that she thinks that all the softness that that Matthew brought forth in her and saw in her died with him.
Oh.
And it's this, just, it's heart-wrenching to watch. I mean, because she's got the baby. The baby never got to meet its dad. And so then there's this whole thing. I can tell what they're going to set up for the big story throughout is going to be Mary versus her father. I really think this is what's going to happen with the Earl of Grantham and taking on his daughter. Because when Matthew died, he was so young that he didn't have a will.
Well, and there's a couple things that I want to point out. I didn't see the episode, but I think it's important for the synopsis. One, he had only guys can inherit, and he was the inheritor, which is why they were keen to marry her to him. And two, he was revamping the whole estate. And so he had fought with both her and Lord Grantham to bring them around to this business plan. And I have a feeling now that one of them is going to still want to embrace it. And one is not going to want to do it without him.
Right. And they talk about that as well, because the Earl Grantham and Branson are both working on the estate and working with the farmers on the estate. And, but when this happened, there was no will. So it would automatically go to his son. And so what they're worried about this. And of course, you know, the Earl of Grantham is like, I'll take care of it. I give me back my stuff, basically, which is what, you know, his big deal. And so what ends up happening is that there's a box of things from Matthew's office that are delivered. And as the Earl of Grantham is wont to do, he opens up everything himself before they give it to Mary because he needs to protect his daughter, you know? And so he finds this document, and it's a note from Matthew to Mary telling her that he wants her to be his heiress. And he signed it, and he actually had two witnesses sign it as well. And so of course you're watching and you're waiting because the Earl, he's totally going to try and bone her by taking this and going off and saying it's not worth anything. It's not an actual will. So you've got Maggie Smith telling him, you can't do that. The hell are you thinking? You're trying to take this from her. This is her inheritance. You can't do that. And it's great because you get to see the Dowager Countess have the back of the girl. And
that's awesome.
And it's great because she calls him out on it. She's looking at him like, she actually tells him when he's talking about this, blah, 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 I can't have her take this, you know, what's not right? It should be going to the boy and I should have to, blah. And she tells him basically, when I hear you talk like that, I feel like calling your nanny and having you spanked or something to that effect.
Because she didn't parent him.
Yeah. Like, I feel like calling nanny and having you put to bed. And he kind of gives her this look like he'd probably do it right now. You know, she would. So there's that, I think, is going to be like the central point of the season. And the other part of that is Edith and her boyfriend, who is a still married editor. And she's talking to him and he's talking about actually becoming a citizen of Germany so he can get divorced to marry her. You know, that's going to go over well with the family because they can't get a divorce in England for some reason some of the rules at this time would not allow it. He would have to become an actual citizen of Germany. And mind you, this is after the war. You know, they're not really hot with the Germans. And so he would have to move with him to Germany too. That's the other part of this. And plus he's divorced. And he's older. Why can't Edith like find a young guy that's normal? Is that so hard? So I can tell that's going to be another biggie of the show. And the other one, the poor little Mosley, who was Matthews.
Poor Mosley.
Mosley, poor guy. There's this sweet little story part where actually the Dowager Countess is actually trying to help him get money because he's fallen on hard times because he doesn't have a job and they actually kicked him out of Downton.
What?
Yeah, I know. He stayed there for 6 months and they're like, we don't have work for you. You should just go now.
That's right. Cause homeboy came back and taught why. And they still,
Yeah. So anyway, poor guy. So what happens is, they help him out. The Dowager Countess helps him. And then you have, there's so many good looking guys in this that I get them. Mr. Bates helps him and Anna helps him, by going to the Dowager Countess. There's this great scene where he goes to her and has her give him £30 to loan him or to give him. And then he does this great thing where he gets his signature and forges it on an agreement that he lies and says, remember when you loaned me this money? Well, I just remembered I owe it to you. Here's £30. And so he could take the money without feeling like it was charity. It's so sweet. Mr. Bates is so sweet. He's like, I love you, Brendan Coyle. You're so cute. And of course, Barrow is being his like queenie self and making all kinds of problems again. He's like latching on to the new lady's maid. Oh, and the big news, the big thing, the first thing that happens in this episode, O'Brien's gone.
What?
He left.
What?
He leaves. She leaves. And that leads into having Edna Braithwaite come back. And now she is the lady's maid for Lady Crawley. So, so the Countess of Grantham, Cora's new lady's maid, because O'Brien left. She decided to go with Rose's mom, leaving Rose, by the way. Rose is still staying at Downton, so that's real nice and awkward for her. That's really the big, and you find out that Carson had a friend that stole a woman from him. He had all these bad feelings with this guy and they worked that out. But really that's it. In 2 hours, this is what we had happen. And, you know, Daisy and Alfred, there's like jealousy and stuff going on with Jimmy. And, you know, that the same thing that happened was happening before. But really, this is it. This is the thing that they, this was 2 hours of the series. And basically just setting up and telling you, okay, here's where these people are. But the major plots of the series of this new season haven't really been there yet. But I can tell that one of, you know, what they set up with Mary and her dad going at it is probably going to be a major piece of it. See, it's not really spoilery because nothing really major
happened. Nothing happened.
Nothing happened.
But that's always the truth for the first episode of Downton. Yeah. It's always just like, all right, this is what's happening.
Yeah, really, that's it. I mean, I would say it's probably not going to gain speed until like episode 3. When something happens, I hope no one dies this season. That would be nice. I'd like to have all my Downton people safe and happy.
Killed off my favorite sister.
Oh yeah. She was everybody's favorite sister, but
it's because she was the only one that was likable.
That had a soul. But I do have to say, I really do like Branson. I almost want Branson to like end up with Mary. Because they both have kids. Oh, and that was one of the things that was really interesting.
And they're both horrible.
Oh, Branson is awesome. He's a sweetie. Don't not Branson, the chauffeur.
He's stubborn.
Yeah, but he's Irish. That's a given.
Oh, my gosh.
I'm Irish. I can say that.
Oh, is that how that works?
Yeah. So, anyway... The thing that happened that I, one of the best parts of the episode, you never get to see Cora really lay into anybody unless it's her husband, like really go off on someone. And they had a nanny that was sort of, she was acting very, you know, very, snotty. And it was funny because our boy, the queen of Downton, Thomas Barrow, didn't like her, and she would boss him around, which, if you know the character, Barrow doesn't take that well at all. He doesn't like being told anything. So he kind of started hinting that he would give it right back to her. You know, he did not like this. So you thought that, well, he just, you know, he was treating her like crap. She was treating him like crap. He had no reason to be that way to her. And then what was interesting was in the nursery, Cora walks in to find the nanny actually yelling at Branson's daughter, and calling her half breed and telling her to shut up because she was bothering the actual blue blood of the place, you know, Mary's baby. And Cora was not happy with that and threw her out like immediately, like would not leave her alone with the children because she was, because of, you know, Barrow or, you know, Branson not being a true blue blood because he was, you know, a servant. Mm-hmm. It was a half breed child. That's what she, and it was this horrible scene. It's like, oh my God. So yeah, it was, you wonder what she'd been doing to the kid when no one was watching or no one saw her and what she'd yelled at the child. So yeah, that's some messed up stuff. Yeah. So that was one of the big scenes too, that I really enjoyed, seeing Cora kind of bring the claws out and kick her out. That was great. So yeah, Downton,
we have almost no time to talk about Sherlock now.
Actually, we have time. So, Rachel and I have both seen Sherlock.
The first two episodes of Series 3.
And I am going to reiterate, Mark Gatiss, the biggest fangirl in the world. That's what I'm saying. He is incredibly a fangirl when it comes to Sherlock, and basically has taken every fanfic and fan theory and fan dream and made two episodes out of them.
Well, you know, Gatiss and Moffat have walked a wonderful line of giving fan service without really giving fan service. They still have their view of how things should go, but they leave certain things ambiguous. So no matter who you ship, you're pretty happy. And no matter, or there's some angst for you, which is happy in our world. But, or also if you had your fan theory, it might not be proved, but it's not disproved. And I think that that's a very delicate line to walk. And I was a little worried because the first episode, it was almost distracting how much they were just putting it out there for the fans, but in a good way. And then the second one kind of, but the first one was really their repilot, you know? So the second one, they came out with, there was an actual mystery to solve and there was, you know, some normalizing happening.
Well, and the theme with the second episode was there was also that fan service, but I don't know how they do it. Mark Gatiss, and especially Mark Gatiss in this, because he's writing these, the brilliance of these episodes is how much they get in packed into them. And the journey that we've seen Sherlock take in just these two episodes, especially the second one, how they've opened him up and he's actually, you know, asking his own brother, don't you get lonely? You have to get lonely. Because now he's actually had a friend. And well, it just is awakening.
I talked about in the videos that we put up on fangirlmag.com and on our YouTube channel about how they made a big deal of, you know, he's regressed. But the truth is, he's only regressed as far as how to pretend to be normal. Emotionally, Sherlock has advanced by a lot.
Right. The thing he's having a problem with is, I think, being able to communicate those emotions. He's feeling them, but he doesn't know how to communicate them.
I think that one of the things that I love is that he is learning to communicate in his own way. And I think there's a moment where he tells his brother that he's lonely, that I think he realizes now that he's not lonely anymore. And that he realizes that very strongly returning to people who are happy to see him and consider him a friend.
Right. And that's why in the second episode, when the wedding is happening and he's sort of, I think part of the reason he had a problem with John getting married is he sees that, and even says this at one point, I think, you know, they're going to have their own family. There will be no room for me in this.
But, you know, I think that I actually a little bit disagree because I really feel that Mark Gatiss has done something that is very difficult to do, which is to introduce a female character with two strong male leads that a good number of the fandom ships. But makes her not an impediment to the two of them. If anything, she makes it so that they can be what they're supposed to be. And I think that that is a great understanding of women. I think that's a great understanding of a fangirl because, I'm sorry, nobody ships John Locke like Mary Morstan ships John Locke. And I think the fact that she and Sherlock buddy-buddy so much is, aside from a concession on Sherlock's part, I think it really shows that they have a mutual respect because of who they both love.
Right. And I think that it makes it, and I said this online and I waited to have my ass handed to me, but I don't think it's about sex with Sherlock and John, even though so many people want it to be. I don't get that. I think it almost makes it incestuous to think about them being a couple. I think it's more of the fact that, like we stated, he has never had a true brother or a friend or anyone that cared about him that he could relate to or actually acted like they cared about him. His own brother made his life a living hell because it was always about who was smarter,
Well, there's that point in when they're in his mind palace and Mycroft's talking and he says, tells him to shut up, and he turns around and in real life points to John and says, "You." And he turns that off. You know, he turns off that cold reason, that cut them all off thing, and says, "What does this person think?"
Well, and on top of that, you know, in his own mind palace, Mycroft was on this pedestal staring down and yelling at him. So he still has that vision of his brother being this imperious person in his life. And you could tell in when they had his parents show up, they were completely not anything that he could relate to. He could not relate to those people. So I can only imagine, even though I thought it was funny that they were his actual real life parents, that was great. that how that was for him growing up, he would have no one.
Can we just talk about, this is off subject, and I don't really want to talk about it, but I'd like to mention that the woman, when she shows up in his mind palace, is naked.
Oh, yeah. I'm sure that's how just he saying. Always sees her. That's how he always sees her. But
if you know where to look.
So,
also, I love the fact that they managed to do all these wonderful, tragic, touching things and still give us the best drunk scene ever.
Oh, God.
And I don't know if you saw this, but Jim Rhodes, who is a piano player who's friends with Ben, and I think he actually has worked with Ben, posted that how wonderfully alike drunk Sherlock and drunk Benedict are.
I actually wouldn't be surprised if they didn't really get drunk for that. And they just filmed it. The part where
the gal is telling him the sad story and drunk Sherlock gets so sad for her, like, I know.
that was one of the best episodes I've ever seen. That was just a great episode, and that's one of those brilliant things where they balance comedy, they balance the pathos, and they have the mystery in there. And just so much good stuff and so much development.
So much canon worked in.
Do what?
There's so much canon worked in. People don't even know.
Oh yeah, totally. And then of course at the end, so people just be aware that there's spoilers here. And if you want to skip the rest of this episode, feel free. At the end of the episode, I'm going to give you a pause. 1, 2, 3. At the end of the episode. At the end of the episode, we discover that Mary is pregnant. And it's great because Sherlock picks up on it. John doesn't. And he's the doctor. And he even states, "I'm a damn doctor." And I didn't realize. And so that is leading into the finale. So can I give my... theory.
Do you want yours first, or do you want mine first?
I'll give mine first, because mine is like the deepest, darkest, evil thing that you can imagine.
Oh, so's mine. So
and here's what I think is going to happen, because no one has died, and no bad thing has really happened in 2 episodes. Do you know how amazing that is for Mark Gatiss and Stephen Moffat not to let someone die or something horrible happen? That means we're going to get royally up the A in the finale, in my mind. And I think what's going to happen is they're going to give fan service again, but it's going to be in the worst possible way. I think Mary is going to have the baby, and I think she's going to die giving birth to it. And it could be due to a couple of things. One, she's just going to die in labor. And John is not going to be able to save her, and it's going to royally mess him up, and he's going to have to, either choose between, maybe they'll make him have to choose between the life of the mother or the life of the baby. And, or she's going to die giving birth because someone shoots her. And it puts her into labor. Something's going to happen there. And then they have the baby. Little Hamish is born, and it's going to be left to Sherlock and John to raise him with Mrs. Hudson. And
well, I think he won't name it Hamish one because they made a big point of how
I know. But the thing that is messed up here is John's going to be destroyed by this. So it's going to be up to Sherlock to be the stable one.
Here's the thing, though. Okay, so of course, as soon as they say she's pregnant, canonically, sometimes Mary dies in childbirth. Sometimes Mary doesn't die till later because Conan Doyle was horrible in continuity, and we all know this. But, you know, I think we know that she dies. The thing that people forget is that she comes into John's life in canon because he helps her. And Sherlock Holmes likes her. And the combination of that is how Mary ends up being Mary. Something that may have gone unnoticed was that when they're reading the telegrams, she's already stated that she's an orphan, but we also know that she's a liar. But she gets this telegram that says, "Lots of love, Papa, oodles of love, and heaps of good wishes from CAM or Cam. Wish your family could have seen this." Don't you think CAM is Charles Augustus Magnuson? And the look on her face?
Of course.
And so I think that they expect everyone to expect Mary to die. I mean, I think Tumblr and everywhere is exploding with people saying, "Don't kill Mary, we like Mary." I think it's going to be worse. I think that they're going to lose the baby. Because I think that Mary's somebody that they can have a lot of fun writing for. And that changes the dynamic for a while. And not that she'll survive ultimately. But I kind of feel like, I don't know.
Well, and I feel like it's going to be horrible. I think it's
whatever it is, even if it's not that, we've been too happy too long.
No, I mean, two episodes of Sherlock to make everybody happy is just not how it goes. So I truly think that it's going to be both of them die or the baby lives and Mary dies and they are left to, you know, raise the child. And I think it's going to be devastating to John, and I think it's going to be an interesting thing to see Sherlock have to be the stable one and to take care of him.
The thing is that would be really interesting because John doesn't have kids, you know, in canon. So that would be a real new departure. That'd be a real new side of that character.
Well, and I think that the hints that they're throwing down too is Gaddis and Moffat. I've already said they've outlined
season four,
it's going to be something that's going to make everybody go, "Huh?" I can totally see it being Sherlock, my two dads.
Yeah, well, I mean, we'll see. I the thing is that I don't want to speculate too much because I think that they did this wonderful thing where they threw at us not only everything that we were expecting, but everything that we kind of joked about and everything that, you know, I mean, right up to Sherlock showing up and going, "Not dead." Like, really?
It should have been coming out of a cake. It could have been better.
All the Tumblr things were done. And so at this point, I'd almost be disappointed if they did what I expected. And I'd almost be disappointed if they did what I wanted. Like, but I trust Gatiss and Moffat ultimately as storytellers.
Yeah, it's going to be interesting to see what they do, especially with the fact that hopefully it won't be another 2 years for them to do it.
Well, I think, you know, the cast was really talking about in a lot of things how they will continue to do it as long as people want them to because they enjoy doing it so much. And there's Martin Freeman, of all people, was talking about how he really missed being on set. So I'm hoping that means we get a little bit more.
Well, and he gets to work with his woman, you know?
Yeah.
That's awesome. I love her, too. I don't want her to die. But, I mean, that's going to happen.
I just love her playing the boys.
I know. She loves it. She loves it. All right. Well, everybody, I think we're out of time. And, be ready. Because as in this Sunday, the finale of season 2 of Sherlock is coming. And we found ways to watch it so you can too. And it's okay because you get to watch it. Don't just go ahead and do it. Just stream it. Stream it. Don't dream it. Stream it. Oh, I'm sorry. But yeah, it's going to be, it's probably going to be a tearjerker, I'm guessing. I think it's going to be a lot more serious than the last two. I'm just saying. But Rachel, thank you for being on. And everybody, like I said, this weekend, check it out and keep your eyes peeled, because if they haven't released something before now, probably this month we'll get to see Capaldi in his outfit for Doctor Who. I'm calling it. I'm thinking we're going to get a pic of his wardrobe this month. We'll see. I can hope. But with that, I want to say thank you again, and we'll talk to you next week. And we may have some really awesome interviews coming up, so stay tuned. This is Fangirl Radio out.